It's T to Green now on Sirius XM Channel 211 and the Sirius app. I'm Jay Ritchie. We're at the Broadmoor Live with another edition of The Big Show, and our next guest is standing by. If you follow golf since the 1970s, you know our next guest, Jan Stevenson, will be inducted in a ceremony coinciding with the U.S. Open Golf Championship in California at Pebble Beach in mid-June. She, over the length of her career that began back in the early 1970s when she was a Rookie of the Year on the LPGA Tour, went on to win over 40 professional wins worldwide, 16 LPGA Tour events, 3 major championships. In 2000, she helped to find the Women's Senior Golf Tour, which is now known as the Legends Tour. And since stepping away from the week-to-week, day-to-day grind of the LPGA Tour, she hasn't slowed down any. A couple of years ago, she bought a golf course in Palm Harbor, Florida, Jan Stevenson's Tarpon Woods. She owns and operates it. She's also offered special programs and instruction for disabled military veterans and first responders, as well as blind golfers. She owns a wine brand and a rum distillery, and in 2011, she was a contestant in Australia's Dancing with the Stars TV show. And today, Jan Stevenson with us on Tee to Green on the guest line. Hi, Jan. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you. Yeah, you kind of said it all.
Have you ever gotten a mulligan on the golf course? Because we're giving you one today on Tee to Green.
Oh, I know. And you know what? I usually am really good about paying attention to, you know, where I am. But actually, this was one time when I was in the Midwest. And so I assumed everybody knew that. So I'm so sorry because I don't usually mess up.
That's all right. You were on the road, so you're excused. I know what life on the road can be like. So you're going into the World Golf Hall of Fame. Congratulations. You finally made it. Well deserved. Long overdue.
Exactly. I'm just so happy it finally. I thought I was going to get there. I figured I'd get there when everybody, if I died or something, then everybody would go, oh my God, we kept overlooking her on purpose. But I'm so happy that it's actually happening. I mean, I think that changing the rules really helped because they weren't recognizing my international wins, because I had, you know, a long time ago, I registered as an American on the LPGA Tour as an American player. And so when you do that, they don't recognize your international wins, but nowadays they do. So I was kind of like ahead of my time because I was playing on the European Tour and the Japanese Tour. But because I was registered as an LPGA player, they weren't recognizing the wins. And so they went, wait a minute, did she look at all the international wins she's got? So I'm just glad they changed it and looked at that.
Well, 3 majors and 16 LPGA Tour wins should have helped as well, don't you think?
Well, that should have been enough. It's certainly, you know, I mean, if you look at equal to that on the PGA Tour, the people that have done that over the years were in 10, 15 years ago. So, yeah, if it was the same credentials, I would have been in a long time ago. But it was actually very upsetting for me because I felt like it was the only thing that I wanted that was missing in my career. And I kept trying to say, oh, it doesn't matter. I know that I helped the tour and that I was busy with that and I would have won more tournaments. But I'm just so happy that it happened.
I did see a quote from you, something to the effect that at least maybe now you can savor it more than had this happened 10, 15 years ago.
You know, that's one thing, is that's true. I mean, as you get older, you start to appreciate a lot more. It's like on, you know, we play on our Legends Tour. There's players that we never spoke to each other, but now we're actually nice to each other because everything changes as you get older and you realize, you know, how important those friendships are in the end. And I really do think that it means more to me now. It's special because I was passed over so many times that when it actually happened, I was shocked, and it's really, really, and you know, people say all the time, and this is one of the things that you regret, you don't listen to your elders. You know, I don't know how many times people say, you need to savor this, you need to enjoy this, you need to stop worrying about next week, and then, you know, you actually just want something, you know, and you go, yeah, and then you don't pay attention. But So people always ask me, what would you do differently? And it's like, listen to my elders.
I think that's good advice for all of us. Speaking as now an elder rather than a youngster. I can agree with you on that one. Jan Stevenson, our guest, going into the World Golf Hall of Fame ceremonies at Pebble Beach in mid-June. You have managed to carve out quite a second or maybe even a third or fourth career for yourself since stepping away from regular golf. What has driven you in the direction you've gone to?
Well, it's no question that, you know, when you play golf, you do have, you do get this work ethic that it's hard to stop. And I just don't know what I would do. Is that when I first left the tour, I used to wake up on a Saturday morning and go, what day is it? And go, it's Saturday. And I'd be so depressed thinking, oh, I must have missed the cut, and just be horrified that I've got, oh, no. And then I go, oh, wait a minute, I didn't even play. You know, it was just instinct. And so I'm like, well, I've got to find something to do. And, you know, even though we started the Legends Tour, it really never took off as well as it should have. And I think that was because of the timing of it. It was right when the LPGA was struggling. And, you know, when we met with the commissioner at the time, it was Ty Vota, he said, you know, I can't afford to be helping you girls when I'm trying to get the LPGA going, and I can't be helping and supporting you. So we kind of went out on our own. Nowadays, it's starting to kick off. But unfortunately, the big names, what we were trying to support, you know, the Lopez and Beth Daniel and Pat Bradley, we're time beyond being able to compete now. So it's you know, that part of it's a shame, but it's like I wanted to do something, and I love the business I'm in. It's very, the wine and the distillery's really taken off, and I'm excited about that. But it's, you know, and now with the golf course, I have a new appreciation of superintendents and all of those things, because I keep, you know, actually they asked me to come speak at the superintendents convention. And I was like, I am so sorry that I ever criticized any of you when I was playing on tour, because I realized how difficult it is when, you know, we had a nematode problem this summer, and oh my God, what a disaster. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe how many times we would complain when we got to a course if it wasn't perfect.
So you're pretty hands-on then with the owning and the operating of the golf course.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I work with my superintendents as soon as when I get home, and every day I'm on the phone, you know, what we're going to do for the winter. And you know, we just did the big coring of all the greens, and I like to be right there and check out, and I'm always having everything tested. And they said, well, nobody ever tests as much as you. And I said, I want to make sure that, you know, it's not the water or not the grass or not the soil. So yeah, I love that part of it, actually.
And how did you end up going into wine and rum?
Well, the wine was actually kind of a joke, because everybody, we used to have on the tour, and especially as we got on the Legends Tour, we had what was called a cellar club. So each time we were going to go to a tournament, we'd call ahead and say, we don't want a chain restaurant, we want a special restaurant, and we're all going to bring our, you know, our own favorite wines, and we'll talk about it. So people would, and they go, oh, Jan's only going to bring some kind of silly box wine, because Australians always have box wine. Yeah. And you know, I actually went to Australia one time, and one of my close friends, who is a winemaker, and who now lives here with me doing my wine, and he doesn't with me, but he lives in America. And I went to sommelier school. So the next year I popped back up onto the cellars club, and I went from one extreme to the other, and they're like, oh my God, she knows everything about it now. And so I had an opportunity with my winemaker he was working for a winery in California to buy a vineyard so he could run both of them. And I just got so hooked on it. I'm there for pruning. I'm there for harvest. I've mixed most of my new blends. And so it's really been fun.
How much fun was the Australian Dancing with the Stars thing, or was it more of a pain in the butt?
Well, it was hard for me, because I still was traveling a little bit back and forth, because I still actually had some sponsors that I had to get permission to be gone that long, because I do a lot of work with them for promotion. And they said, yeah, go for it, it's okay. So I kind of, a couple of times I went back and forth, which made it very difficult for me to learn. And I didn't like that it was so fixed. You know, I mean, they already know who's pretty much going to be in the finals, and it horrified me. It's like, why are we working so hard if they already know that? So, of course, I was a very bad loser. I started crying when they kicked me off, and I was terrible. And the producer's shouting in the ear, she's ruining it, stop! You know, and it was like, I couldn't stop crying. I was so upset that I got kicked off.
How far did you go? How far did you get?
Oh, I only did like 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, but it was, and I had such a wonderful dancer, and I was like, wait till next week, I've got this really good dance, because, you know, you have to kind of learn the next dance while you're learning the one you're doing. You kind of always have to be one ahead, and it's like, oh, no, the next, my foxtrot's going to be so good, and it was like, and the thing is that in Australia, you pay to vote, and so all of my friends, I was like, well, don't worry about voting this week, because I actually was competing, and when you compete, you get paid that goes to your designated charity. And I designated Olivia Newton-John's in Australia because she's a good friend of mine, and I thought, oh, well, that. So I asked her to appear that this 1 week I got kicked off, because I was like, well, she's coming, and she was going to be an honorary judge, and she was there. So I said, well, they won't kick me off because I'm bringing a superstar from America. So I said, no, don't vote this week. We'll get through one, just, you know, the politics of it. And halfway through, they kick off one person and another, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to go. And it's like, oh, I really screwed up.
Well, were you a dancer before you got into that?
Oh, no, I'd never danced before. And in fact, I used to always say, no, I don't dance, you know, when people would ask me to dance. My mother was a professional dancer, so and she was alive at the time. That's one of the reasons I did it, was it was something as a gift for her, because she'd always said, I wish you'd have, you know, still kept, learned to dance. And so, because I had to stop dancing when I was like 11.
Hey, Jan, we're coming up on a break, but we'll finish, pick up on the other side. Jan Stevenson with us today on Tea to Green. Be right back.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 4422 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 4422, code 4422. Enjoy!
At Robert Half, we know finding the right employees is a job in itself, and it's a job we love. You see, Robert Half isn't just a staffing firm. We're people. People who believe in finding the right people to fit your company's needs. Because employees who are a good fit are more productive, more engaged. Finding a great candidate isn't easy, but at Robert Half, we know it's possible. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
At 28, I had struggled with opiate and meth addiction for 12 years. I did and said things that the sober me never would have done. One day I realized I was not invincible. I was not exempt. And that's when a friend told me about Elite Rehab Placement. They gave me the tools I needed to get sober, and all it took was the one phone call.
Elite Rehab can help you start to break your addiction problem and get sober in as little as 7 days. And we'll work with your insurance provider to help cover the costs. Plus, we have travel assistance programs to get you here by plane or train. Make this free call right now to learn more.
800-403-5912, 800-403-5912, 800-403-5912. That's 800-403-5912.
Hey, hey, it's Flo. And you know what word I've never understood? Top hat. Aren't all hats on top? They're like the toppest part of every outfit. Unless I've been doing it wrong. That's why I stick with simple words like flotection. It means the sense of security you'll feel when your new home is protected by home insurance through me and Progressive. Also, there shouldn't be a top hat unless there's a bottom hat. Wait, is that what underwear is?
Save an average of 17% on car insurance when you bundle home and auto through Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
golfers listen because we speak their language every week right here on Tee to Green, the golf show. Great to have you with us. We're at the Broadmoor Resort, Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm Jay Ritchie and our guest, Jan Stevenson. 2018, she was honored with the Order of Australia Medal for her contributions to the game of golf. And this June, just a couple of months from now, she'll be going into the World Golf Hall of Fame in ceremonies at Pebble Beach during the U.S. Open Championship, along with Peggy Kirk-Bell, Retief Goosen, Billy Payne, and Dennis Walters. And we have her today on Tee to Green. Jan, you mentioned your friendship with Olivia Newton-John before we went to the break, and it just jogged my memory. I had a chance to interview her on the telephone once on the radio at an early in my career at a radio station I worked at. How's she doing these days?
She's actually doing well. I mean, if you listen to, you know, a lot of the reports that she's not. But, I mean, she's got such a great attitude, and she's so positive, and she's doing both. She does the conventional as well as alternative, which is what her charity does in Australia. So hopefully she's going to be okay.
Let's go back and talk about your career a little bit. You started back in 1974, and you came out with the bang. You were the Rookie of the Year that year. Along the way, you collected 16 wins on the LPGA Tour and three major championships in 81, the DeMarier, in 82, the LPGA Championship, and in 83, the U.S. Women's Open. Any of those that you look back on now and feel best about or stand out most to you?
Well, I think that all three of them, you know, are really important because majors are something that you really recognize. I mean, each one of them was special. The 81, you know, with the DeMarier, which was the Canadian Open, was very important because, or the Peter Jackson, because it was my first major, and I had, you know, I had to make a putt to win, which was, you know, unusual because usually I was a front runner. But I remember the week before we were playing Rochester, New York, and I'd missed a couple of putts coming down the stretch. And Pat Bradley and Nancy Lopez were, you know, I think Pat won that one and Nancy finished second, so I finished third. So when I was winning the Peter Jackson, I was winning wire to wire, and then, of course, Nancy birdied 17 with about a 45-footer. I was watching ahead because I was in the last group. And then Pat Bradley birdied 18, so both of them then were tied. And if I didn't make a birdie on the last hole, I was going to have to go into a playoff with them, and I wasn't looking forward to that because my playoff record was terrible. I think it was 1-6, so I didn't want to go into a playoff with them. And so I had to make about a 12-foot putt downhill left to right, and I was in the last group. And in those days, we played with metal spikes. And I remember my father was caddying for me, so it was extra special. And I remember we both sat, you know, knelt down to look at the putt, and all I could see was spike marks. They looked like mountains. And I remember thinking to myself, there is no way this putt can go in. There's so many spike marks. And the sun was setting because I was in the last group and I was on TV. And I remember thinking, how in the world is this putt going to go in? So when it went in, it was really, really special. And then, of course, I got this. You know, and I remember I was so nervous. I was shaking so bad. I was scared to actually ground the club in case I hit the ball. And when I made it, everybody said, oh, she's just so good, putter. She's just so cool, calm, and collected. And they have no idea what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, made it, though, like a true champion. You mentioned a couple of, you know, Nancy Lopez, Pat Bradley. Was there a pretty good rivalry going amongst not just yourself and those two, but all the top golfers at that time, female golfers?
You know, that's a great question because I would think of all of the people, you know, when I think of all the people that I've gotten to play with, like when I first came over as a rookie, you know, some of the top, Louise Suggs and Patty Bird were still playing and Mickey Wright. So I got to play with them for at least a couple of years. So it was really exciting. But you think of the era that really I played my best golf or we played. And you've just like you said, you've got Nancy Lopez and Pat Bradley and Patty Sheehan and Amy Alcott. And then you've got, you know, Betsy King and Beth. And there were so many fantastic players that it was hard to win because they were all so good. You know, nowadays there might be 130 players, but we had about 15 that were really good. So it was hard to break through and win because they were so good.
Yeah, all great. And every one of those golfers you mentioned, we've had on our radio show, and they've been all fantastic to talk to. Wow. And to talk about their careers through the years. as well. So did you have a best friend or a couple of best friends among that group?
Well, I don't think any of us had any friends. We were all very competitive. That's what was so funny is I remember the first time we played, I got paired with Pat Bradley in our Legends event. It was one of our first seniors events. And it was a pretty big event. And Pat was, like, going up to the volunteers and talking. And I'm like, Pat, we're, like, two holes behind. What are you doing? And she said, you know, I feel so bad because not only did I not speak to you, I never said thank you to any of the volunteers. So I'm trying to make up for it. And I said, well, you can't make up for it in one tournament because we're going to get penalized. But that's the attitude. Everybody is so happy to be competing that now, even though we still want to beat each other's brains out when we get on the course, it's just a different atmosphere. And, you know, like you talk about with savoring, you really look back now and enjoy the whole thing. I mean, Amy Alcott, same thing. I mean, you know, she was so lovely when I was voted into the Hall of Fame, and she said, you know, this was so overdue. You were such a great player and a hard worker and did so much for the tour. And it's like she would never have said that 30, 20 years ago.
Jan Stevenson on the TD Green guest line. She is still competing on the Women's Senior Golf Tour, which she helped to co-found back in 2000. Back in the 1980s, Jan, let's talk about ladies golf and sex appeal, which you couldn't really talk about one or the other without talking about the name Jan Stevenson. How did all that happen, other than the fact that you are and were a very attractive woman?
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, when I first came over, we had a new commissioner in 1975, and he had come from the NHL, and he goes, wait, we need to change this whole image of the tour because it's, you know, their players are great, they're fun, and you know, and there's some cute girls out there. So he kind of, because I was from another country, thought, oh, this will just start with me, and I had just started playing well and won in 76. So this is going to be the new image. So they can't say she can't play. And so he asked me if I would do a lot of pictures and would have a new program that would go out to that would be inserted in our programs at the tournament. So we did a bunch of photos. Of course, that caused a big uproar. And then I was the first person to play Metal Woods. And then with TaylorMade, they signed a contract with me in 1980 that said that if I win a major, then my contract would be doubled. And so they didn't, they didn't take the insurance policy. And so, of course, I won three majors. So now my endorsement was so high that TaylorMade came to me and said, would you mind if we do a poster and see if we can get some of our money back? I was like, no, I don't care. You've got 4 days to do whatever you want for promotion. So we did the calendar with the skirt blown up, and which became the second, no, excuse me, a poster that became the second largest selling poster next to Farrah Fawcett's. And so I think they got their money back on that.
Yeah, I think so. So away from the course, off the course, did you have a lot of endorsement deals back then?
Oh, yes, it was. And I got invited to obviously do a lot of corporate outings and, you know, a lot of the member tournaments, and they paid quite a bit of money. So I spent most of my Mondays, if I wasn't helping the tour in the 70s, I spent most of my Mondays signing new potential sponsors with the LPGA. So I would fly out on a Sunday and I'd meet with potential sponsors in New York and we'd play golf and they would sign big contracts. But in the 80s, by then we had the contract signed. So I did a lot of traveling on Sunday nights to do Monday golf outings for companies. So it was a very busy schedule.
Yeah, obviously the sex appeal part of Jan Stevenson's golf career was a big part of it back in the 1980s. If you were playing today, would that still be a component, do you think?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, nowadays when the girls, you know, they ask for money to do certain things, but I think it would be a totally different situation I'd probably be even a bigger star because of Twitter and the social media. I'm sure I would have some kind of podcast and be doing a lot more. But it is fun. I mean, there's no question that the girls like Alexi and, you know, some of these young players have really got a fun life because I know I've been through it. So I definitely think it would be a big deal, but not as controversial. It would just be a nice lucrative deal.
How was the money back then in ladies golf?
The money was small. I know when I won the Open, I think I won around 50,000, and now they win $600,000 or $700,000 for the U.S. Open. So a huge difference in prize money, and they're still nowhere near the men's except for the majors. So that part of it was different. But that's why I didn't, you know, if you do a corporate outing, you'd get paid equal to a second prize. Because people kept saying, why didn't you just stay playing golf? Because you could have been even won more tournaments. But what they didn't realize is that you're offered second place money for one day. It's hard to turn that down.
When you finally retired, quote unquote, from the LPGA Tour, was that a tough call, tough decision for you? Or were you ready at that point?
That's a good one too, because I never officially retired, because they actually kept saying, do you want to have a farewell tour where you say goodbye to all of your sponsors, and like Nancy did. But we all tease that Nancy had two or three farewell tours because she wanted to come back because she missed it so much. And I was afraid that I would do the same thing. So I said, no, I don't want one. And then I never really had one because I didn't want to quit. And so I didn't want to say I was quitting, and I thought our senior tour would take off, so I kind of wanted to be able to do both, and then I got into business and charity work, so I never did. So I actually regret that I didn't agree and have a goodbye tour.
Since 2000, on the Women's Senior Golf Tour, which is now known as the Legends Tour, you've won 6 tournaments, 23 top 10 finishes. So are you satisfied with your career on the Legends Tour, or maybe could it have been better?
Well, at the Legends Tour was fine, and I feel like by the time we really got some tournaments, it's too late for me, because it's hard to compete. Our Legends Tour started at 45 because we wanted to get Nancy in, and so those girls coming from the tour at 45 can still really play. In fact, they can still play at 50 and 55, and I just think that I kind of missed the window, and I still love to compete. I mean, I missed that part desperately, and I probably that's why I work so hard at my alcohol business, because it is so competitive and such a man's world. It's like I'm determined to make it. So I guess that's where I've moved my competitive nature, and so that part of it, I you always miss competing. Every athlete I've ever talked to says that's the part they really miss, and they don't really want to walk away.
There's now a women's U.S. Senior Open. Are you playing in that this year?
I am planning on playing in that, which means that I've only got 2 weeks to get my game in shape. I'm actually, after this, I'm ready to go practice, and everybody's in shock because I said I'm shutting down working with everybody for 2 weeks, which, of course, it won't happen, but that's what I told everybody.
And then you're on to the Pacific Northwest for a Legends Tour event in Kingston, Washington, a week before the Hall of Fame induction.
I know, that's going to be so exciting. I don't know how I'll play. I'm going to be so excited. But it was really nice of the sponsors, because they actually finished the tournament on a Saturday so that we could get there on Sunday, because all of the Hall of Famers have a private dinner where they give a dinner to the new inductees, and so that's apparently very special. So there's quite a few of the Hall of Famers that are playing in Washington. So the sponsors said, let's finish on a Saturday so everybody can still play in our event and make it, which was really nice.
The late Peggy Kirkbell, 2-time U.S. Open champion, Retief Goosen, Billy Payne of Masters fame, and Dennis Walters and Jan Stevenson going into the World Golf Hall of Fame, the class of 2019. The induction ceremony scheduled for Pebble Beach in mid-June during the U.S. Open. Jan, congratulations again. We're going to go out of this segment with a little Olivia Newton-John for you. But thanks for joining us today here on Tee to Green.
Thank you very much.
Come back and visit with us again sometime soon.
Thank you.
Jan Stevenson going into the World Golf Hall of Fame this June. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back. We're going on tour. This is Tee to Green. Be right back. Mm-hmm.